Tribal colleges were created by tribal people to serve their communities and their people on mostly on Indian reservations.
We can have the top line variety or technology, but the access sometimes is an issue.
This is In the Know with ACCT, the voice of community college leaders. I'm Jacob Bray.
First of all, welcome. I'm so happy to see you, Carrie. Here with us today, we have Carrie Billy, who is president of the American Indian Higher Ed Consortium. And as an extra special treat, we have David Yarlott, president of Little Bighorn College in Montana. So first of all, I want to say welcome, and thank you so much for making the effort to talk with us today. We're thrilled to have you here. Carrie, would you tell us a little bit about yourself and AHEC?
Well, I am the president and CEO of AHEC, the American Indian Higher Education Consortium. We have 38 tribal colleges in 16 states, serving about 160,000 American Indians, Alaska Natives, and other rural community residents in academic and community-based programs throughout Indian country. We cover about 80% of Indian country through the tribal colleges. There's 38 colleges, but they operate 75 sites.
Wow. Okay, and David, tell us about you and your wonderful position at Little Bighorn.
Thank you for having me here. Of course, David Yarlott, Little Bighorn College, which is located in Crow Agency, Montana, the heart of the Crow Indian Reservation. We serve about 275 students annually. Sometimes it spikes up to 350 or so. But we're a community college, two-year college, and most of our students commute in. Some of them, 210 miles round trip.
Wow. Now, I want to know, how did you become president? What's your educational history?
I started out at a university in cultural shock and what have you. I dropped out, went back home, then found out about the tribal college starting up in our community. And just out of curiosity, I enrolled while I was working for the BIA Forestry Department part-time for 7 years. Never got my degree and then transferred out to university. And when I was working on my bachelor's, I tested the job market. Didn't find anything that I liked that would pay me what I wanted to get paid. So I looked into a master's program, and once I got into the master's program, I knew that I was going to pursue my doctorates. And I stayed right there at Montana State University in Bozeman. And while I was working on my dissertation, I got recruited back to teach business courses at my alma mater. What is really interesting is that when I became the president in 2002, AHEC would introduce me as a tribal college graduate, which I really felt uncomfortable because I wasn't a graduate of Little Bighorn College, even though I had a lot of credits. So in 2006, I submitted my transcripts to our academic council, and they reviewed it and noticed that I was lacking two courses, which interestingly was in the Crow Studies program. But once they reviewed it, they did accept a Native American Studies course that I took at Montana State. They accepted that. The second course was a Crow language course, which I asked to challenge because I'm a fluent Crow speaker. They said that's way too easy, so they had me work on a project. 2006, 7 years after I got my doctorates, I received my associate's, so I'm an alumnus of Little Bighorn College.
Oh, fantastic. I love that. That's a wonderful story, how we go back to our roots. Somehow it just automatically happens because we're driven to education and we love it. That's a wonderful story. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Carrie, you know ACCT works with governance, and can you talk a little bit about the governance of tribal colleges and universities and how it's different from the more traditional, you know, American way of looking at college governance?
Well, AHEC is really proud and excited about the partnership we have with ACCT. Over the past 3 years, we've had three GISS sessions with our tribal college presidents and their governing boards, which has really been tremendous, focusing on getting our boards involved in student success in a way that's really relatable and easy for them to understand. So we appreciate all that ACCT has done with the tribal colleges. We also did a publication some years ago with ACCT on governance at the tribal colleges that has very interesting information about how our boards are made up. But to go back to the even before we talk about the governance, about how tribal colleges were created by tribal people to serve their communities and their people on mostly on Indian reservations. But because of the treaty obligations and trust responsibilities and the exchange of over a billion acres of land, the operating funding responsibility for tribal college actually comes from the federal government. So the colleges are funded for operating by the federal government through the Department of Interior. But because they're chartered by tribal governments, the tribal governments determine who's on the board of most of the tribal colleges. So there are community members, just like other community colleges throughout the United States. They range in membership from maybe 5 to 9. Some are elected. A lot are appointed by tribal councils. And then we have some schools that are actually chartered by the federal government. So they have sort of a quasi governing board that's more advisory, but increasingly taking over more responsibility. But because the federal government ownership, they have to respond to the Bureau of Indian Education.
Wow, it is very different. So you're saying most of the tribal councils are the ones that appoint the presidents. David, you are a college president, so tell me about your board and how you became a president, and the process you had to go through to become a president.
Let me start with the board. Since the inception of the tribal college, at Little Bighorn College, at that time they were appointed by tribal council. And it started out as a Crow Central Education Commission. And as they chartered the Little Bighorn College, then it became an elected position, 2 members from every district, and with the tribal council also having a representative on the board. But it became an issue when the board itself and then the tribal council took matters into their affairs and took some personnel action, which violated our accreditation. So Little Bighorn College was placed on probation by Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities at that point, saying that the tribe had no business in interfering with the college matters. So moving forward, the tribal council at that point, when they realized their action had put the college at risk, put out a resolution saying that there will be an arm's length relationship, that they will not interfere with college activities. So since then, the board itself, with the president, would manage the election affairs of board members. Mm-hmm. That continued to be an issue because during election times, sometimes there won't be any candidates, but it still costed the college dollars, thousands of dollars, right, to run elections. So just last year, they decided to change their format. They went to a nomination and appointment, which it's the board that decides who's going to step in. So we're in our first year, so we haven't had a vacancy yet to be filled, so we have to wait to see how that goes.
You know, change is happening all across this country, and leadership is such a big issue. I also want to say, before I forget, I was a part of the accrediting team for Northwest, and I was at Fort Peck. So Montana and Big Sky, I get it. It's huge. It's many spaces, big, wide spaces, and the colleges really are quite isolated from, let's say, more cities and you know, a lot of commerce and all of that. I was quite fascinated, you know, in my visit to Montana as an evaluator, and to see the wonderful things that Fort Peck was doing, and it was remote, and I assume that is a Little Bighorn as remote as, let's say, Fort Peck?
Just about. We have a main, you know, highway that goes by, so we're not as remote as Fort Peck, but we are in the heart of the Crow Indian Reservation. We're, you know, between Yellowstone Park and the Black Hills, so we do have a lot of traffic that goes through there. And many times people just drive through, look at our facilities, our campus, and years later may stop in and say that we've always wondered about this place, so we want to stop in and check it out. Just a little short story. About 4 or 5 years ago, on a weekend, I just happened to go through and I noticed that there was some trash on the ground. So I just stopped and was picking up trash, what have you. And this couple stopped in and said, "We wondered about this place. What is this place?" And I said, "This is a tribal college." And so they started asking me questions. And so I started responding. And I asked them, "Did you want to take a tour?" And, well, they were more than happy to, you know, to take up my offer. So I walked them through and how the college had started and, you know, the history behind it, how the buildings came into place and what have you. And after the tour, and you know, I shook their hands and thanked them for stopping by. And said, and then they asked me, "May I ask you a question?" I said, "Sure." I said, "For a custodian, you sure know a lot about the history of this college." And I told them that I was the college president. They were just amazed.
It's funny, as an administrator, I've learned our role is to serve. It really is to serve, and you obviously were serving your institution in many different ways. And I taught a college once about accreditation, and I said, everyone is part of this. You know, the janitor, the custodians, they help direct students on where to go and, you know, what they know and what they've learned about the institution. Everyone has a role in education and helping students, and so I appreciate your willingness to clean up. Okay, leadership in higher ed is quite an issue right now, and leaders are under the gun with all the wild trends and political issues flying around and keeping good leadership. Carrie, from your standpoint, you've worked with these tribal colleges and universities for quite a long time now. What do you see as the critical issues that leaders and boards have to face today?
Well, one issue that not all of the colleges face, tribal colleges, but many do, is declining enrollment, which is an issue in higher education across the board throughout the nation. But that's a critical issue for our institutions because they're small to begin with. So trying to address the issues of declining enrollment, the potential or the opportunity of adult learners, like President Yarlott was, who might have a few credits but didn't get a degree. There are a lot of people in the community who we could serve, I think, with more educational opportunities. So trying to attract them, but also we have a serious high school dropout rate among American Indian and Alaska Native teens. About 50% drop out of high school. So capturing those students' interest in education so they complete high school and go on to college is an area that we really need to focus on. And most of the colleges have dual credit programs to work to try to address that issue. And it is making a change, but we need to address that. We're very rural, and the opioid crisis that is impacting particularly rural America, but all of the country, is in Indian country. Very, very serious challenges. So that's an immediate challenge, but also a challenge if you look 10, 20 years in the future, because we're going to be serving students who were either addicted or whose parents were. So that's another serious challenge that our institutions face. We are doing a lot also in economic development and job creation. Tribal colleges, one of the reasons they were created, well, two reasons. They were created to sustain their cultures, language, and traditions. That's the core of tribal colleges, a very important part of all of our institutions. The other part is to help build the economies, do nation building. Right. And tribal colleges are doing that. They've been doing it forever in workforce development. But in workforce development, you're filling jobs that were going to be filled anyway. You're not moving the needle on the economic base of the community. So moving into job creation is something that we are beginning to do, but we really need to scale up if we're ever going to change the situation in Indian country.
Right. For things to be effective, any initiative strategy, you have to scale it up. It has to be a best practice that works and works well. And the fact of the remoteness of many of these tribal colleges is a real big factor. I was just talking with some folks about equity. And one of the signs of equity, I say at the institutes, broadband, if students don't have access to the technologies. So I guess, David, I want to ask you or both of you, the technology piece, I see technology as I see the pros and cons of technology. I don't buy into all of it, but I do see that for rural and remote areas and institutions, you can bring in learning opportunities for students. And so I wanted to ask, how much technology is available at tribal colleges and universities, and how is it being used?
I would say it's a broad variety of technology. We can have the top line variety or technology, but the access sometimes is an issue. Just 4 years ago is when we finally got fiber into our community, to the tribal college, but our outlying community don't have access to it. So we could have online programs or whatever else that we need in the technology area, but if our students at home can't access it, why are we putting in a lot of money that our students can't access? And it's not like that with all tribal colleges. Some tribal colleges have better connectivity, right, better access, so they're able to advance quite a bit more. But I also agree with you that technology is going to play a key role. Is really critical because with our students, we say the millennials, they want instant access. So we're looking at how we're going to offer our programs. We're looking at doing hybrid programs where they come in one day a week, and then if they have access to their internet wherever, that they can do their work at home. So we're trying to, make things work making access available to our students. Kerry had mentioned earlier our declining student enrollments. What can we do to make sure that they continue to come back?
Right. Students today walk around with their phones, and as we look toward the future of education and the evolution of learning, they're going to walk around with their cell phones carrying their portfolios and their their digital badges and their educational history with them, and it's very personalized, and so it's helping those students, have access to whatever, the things that they need. And particularly for remote colleges, it's a way to bring in the outside world in a safe environment where I think that the native students can maintain their own culture, but also have access to, the resources. Kerry, you mentioned something that was really important, and we do this a lot in our Governance Institute for Student Success Institutes, and that is the workforce imperative, imperative right now. So much change is happening in work and learning. We even do a session now called The Changing Worlds of Work and Learning, and we have boards of trustees and the presidents and the executives talk about change, the changes they've been through and the changes that they see coming, and basically trying to find out how they deal with change. Because change is happening all the time with us, and it's happening faster than it ever used to happen because of things like technology. It's change is exponential. So what are some of the resources, initiatives, avenues that you see that boards and colleges can, number one, champion those changes, the good changes, and two, help their communities and the workforce that may or may not be in those communities so these students can adapt to change?
Well, one initiative that we have right now with the Department of Energy is in advanced manufacturing, where we're working with 5 tribal colleges to bring advanced manufacturing, 3D printing, and partnerships with industry, mostly the defense and aerodynamics industry, but bringing those businesses to the reservation. So it's a really neat project because we are using the tribal college. They have the facilities. They're partnering with their tribes to maybe locate an old building or some kind of facility that existed, a clothing manufacturing facility that's now empty. They're converting that to be an advanced manufacturing facility, partnering with industry, and then the tribal colleges are training the students in 3D imaging and printing, and so they're creating these little tiny parts for engines and selling them to Boeing, for example. So it's a really great way to bring an industry that didn't ever exist to the reservation, and the tribal college working with the tribe they're the key partners. But the tribal college can keep training more and more people in that particular industry. And then, so we have that project with five tribal colleges. We're trying to expand it with others. But the other, another initiative, we actually do have an initiative in technology. Tribal colleges have good connectivity, but as David was saying, our students don't outside at their homes. So they, even if they're doing distance education or doing online, using open source materials for education, the students have to come to the college to use the computer labs or use right. The wireless on the college campus for their homework. That's really difficult if you have young children at home, for example. Then the whole family has to come and sit in the car while the mother does her homework.
Right.
So we've got to try to address that issue. But on another level, we also have to make sure that our tribal colleges are connected to the whole education internet system, the research base of this country. So that's what we're working on now, connecting, trying to determine the need and that sort of that last mile to connect tribal colleges to the same internet systems that major universities and other community colleges are connected to, internet to, and that. So hopefully we'll be making progress on that over the next few years.
That does sound positive, but it really takes an effort. And I know there's some national efforts. Some foundations are trying to connect more rural, remote areas across the country, because they know that access is a major equity issue and access issue.
Right. We believe that tribal colleges and other rural community colleges should all be part of the federal E-rate program for equipment and connectivity. That would really help move rural America forward and Indian Country.
And David, getting back to workforce and I also want to talk about, ask you another question after you answer this one, about what jobs do your students get, you know, on the reservation. So how is workforce in any way engaged in your college?
Employment opportunities are very limited on our reservation, and most of our students are hired by the Crow Tribal government, the local school districts, K-12 public schools, the federal government, Bureau of Indian Affairs, Indian Health Service. So it's more service type jobs that they go into. A lot of our students, because of our economic environment, our students are grabbed up by the tribal government even before they finish. And if there's a job over sitting in the classroom, they'll take the job. So a lot of times our students, without completing, will move on. Let's say when the administration changes, we hope and we think that they're going to come back if they're not hired. But that isn't the case, because they sit at home and wait, hoping that they will get hired back on. So that contributes to our declining student enrollment. So what we're trying to do is, provide connections, if you will, through job fairs with the local, like a little bit further out off the reservation, Billings, which is the large community, and try to connect our students with the employment opportunities in Billings. When the Bakken oil fields happened, a lot of our students withdrew and ended up going to the Bakken oil fields, and many of them are still there. The industry has slowed down a little bit, but it's starting to pick up again. We thought that some of them would come back again. They're staying in that area because, you know, it's good paying jobs for them.
I think it's a real dilemma, because at some point in time you had to leave your area and to go to the university and be exposed. And so I'm thinking now, because, you know, we focus on leadership and boards. So are all board members, do you ever have board members from outside the community as part of the discussion, is there any outside engagement other than folks in your tribe, in the reservation?
With Little Bighorn College, it's all tribal members, and they have to come within the reservation boundaries. I guess the philosophy at that time was that if you're from the outside, you don't know, you know, the issues within the reservation. So I do want to add that we take pride that our Board of Trustees, they all speak fluently, and we conduct our business in our own native language. And I believe we are the only tribal college that can lay claim to that.
Oh, that's fascinating. Oh, I would love to record that. Obviously, I hope that continues. I mean, we've lost so many languages, and so that's a wonderful tradition.
Thank you.
I love that tradition, and I know how important it is. The cultural heritage and language is so important to all of the tribal colleges, and it's one of the momentum points. I know when we do the institutes, we track how well students are doing in many areas, and one of them including their cultural heritage and native language.
You know, I do want to add something to the workforce. We've been working with our tribal government to see if there's we can delve into alternative energy projects. We have solar that we're putting on our facilities, and just 3 weeks ago now we finally implemented connecting our solar to our new health and wellness center. So we still have to wait to see what kind of results that we'll get. But that is something that we're hoping that the tribal government would look into. Another avenue that we're looking at is I had a meeting scheduled with the president of the National Home Builders Association because housing is really limited on a reservation. So what we're hoping to do is create a curriculum around home building. And I was supposed to meet with the president several weeks ago when I was in New York. That didn't happen, but he is coming down for our annual Crow Fair. We're setting up a meeting at that time to see how we can make that work.
Oh, that's fascinating. So you've given me a real a little bit of insight into the development of a program. Because you are the leader you are and you're insightful, you have a vision of what could happen. You're keeping your eyes and your ears open as to how change can happen, what can help the students. And I love the fact that I can see this program developing and all the skills and the learning that needs to go with it. Wow.
You know, going back to the leadership piece, I guess I never thought I would be a leader. It just things that happen along the way that, you know, when I became a member of the AHEC being a president, I never sought to be the chair of the American Indian Higher Education Consortium. And I'm on my second stint and as the board chair, and I'm also a board chair second time around again for the American Indian College Fund. So it's not that I look for these, but you know, I think it's just a matter of being able to look out on the horizon and think about others instead of yourself only.
Well, leadership has many facets to it, and I think you're demonstrating today your openness and your honesty and your sincerity, some of the qualities that we need in our leaders. And that's one thing that the GIS Institutes, I know, try to focus on, healthy board functioning. So I want to talk a little bit about leaders and about their boards. Sometimes we call it herding cats. You've got a whole array of different people with different interests. How do you see boards functioning? How do you get them to get along with each other and work well with you?
I think it's always about having a common goal, stressing back to what our purpose is. With us at the Little Bighorn College, we always fall back upon our students. Is that why we're there? Is that why you know, first we're interested in being a board? And what is your vision for Little Bighorn College in valuing their input and understanding where they're coming from and just thinking about, and then how can we make this work? And sometimes the board members themselves that have ideas as we talk through it decide that it's either going to work or maybe they say, well, maybe it's not a very good idea at this point. So they have that opportunity to decide themselves.
And Carrie, I know you work with all these leaders. And you work with the board members, and you have your own advisory board. Tell me, you know, your thoughts about leadership today.
One of the exciting things about the leadership of the tribal colleges is that our leaders are getting younger and younger. So we have, so that's, and they have new ideas. So that's one thing that keeps, I think, our work exciting. We have 5 open positions right now with tribal colleges. 4 new presidents are just starting this month in May. So, and they're all, you know, younger, many haven't been involved in tribal colleges before. So they're gonna come in with whole new ideas. So that's, to me, very exciting. And we see that dynamic. The AHEC board has 35 members. All the presidents of the accredited tribal colleges sit on the AHEC board. And they're all diverse, have different interests. But again, really focused on that goal, the vision, of AHEC and the vision of their college's strong sovereign nations through excellence in tribal higher education. The core of that is the students and our language and culture. And so everyone comes together around those issues. And if we stay focused on that, we can move forward. But just like any board, we have our moments of dysfunction.
I think many times our country has, it's obvious, so some of our leaders have some dysfunction as well.
But, you know, focusing on the students brings everybody back to our common goals.
Right.
So.
Right, and that's why we love to, you know, ACCT loves to work with the tribal colleges. We think this partnership has been so beneficial for us in understanding some of the real issues and the important issues. And I see the issues that facing the tribal colleges and universities are exacerbated, and you know, by the remoteness and, you know, of many of the institutions and many of the critical issues facing education today, resources, all of that. And so I'm hoping that our partnership will last for quite a while, and I'm really pleased to have you today. How about some last comments from both of you?
I just want to thank you for having us here and being able to share some stories back and forth. You know, I think the future for tribal colleges is bright. There was a question that came up from the Tribal College Journal. How do you see tribal colleges in 50 years? And I see that we're going to be leaders in a sense where the environment itself, the natural resources, water, land, and some of our people at tribal colleges will be experts in those areas, because that is still a part of us. We value our land. We value the water. We're a part of it. We don't own it. So I think in the future that we are going to be experts in those areas.
Beautiful statement.
Just to pick up on that, this is the 50th anniversary of the first tribal college. Diné College on the Navajo Nation was founded 50 years ago. So we're celebrating that 50th anniversary. AHEC is, in a few years, going to be celebrating our 45th anniversary. So one president described it this way. These leaders that we've had over the past 50 years have taken us through the first circle of the tribal college movement. We're on the edge of the second circle of the tribal college movement, and it's the students and those new young presidents who are going to lead us into that second circle and beyond. And so that's where we are now, and it's really exciting.
Oh, I'm thrilled about this. And thank you so much for spending time with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.